We have a quorum, so we're ready to go. Representative Dominguez, have you read over the last week's minutes?
Yes, I have. I want to move those minutes.
Representative Dominguez moves the minutes of the last meeting, which was February 2nd. Thank you. First bill up today is House File 279. Representative Haas and Representative Severson. Excuse me, gentlemen, before we proceed, we need to vote on the minutes also. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Go ahead.
I would like to introduce House File 279, and I would like it to be passed as amended to the Agriculture, Rural Economics, and Veterans Affairs Committee with the recommendations to be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Okay, identify yourself for the record.
Oh, excuse me, sir. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Larry Haas, and all that stuff I said before still holds true.
Thank you.
Today we're going to be talking about the clarification of an old law. That law was referred to as the War Orphans Act of 1943. We're going to give clarification, and we're going to upgrade and expand that law in a few places. Let me indicate to you where they're at. The law gives undergraduate tuition and fees to the child of a veteran who has been killed in service. We will now be asking that the spouse of that veteran also receive tuition and free for an undergraduate degree in the state of Minnesota. They will be receiving an annual educational stipend of $750. That was past benefit for the child. We are now asking that to be a benefit for the spouse. We have a change in the residency requirements. The previous residency requirements were based on the child. Now we're basing the residential requirements on the individual when he enlisted or was drafted into service. So at the time of enlistment or drafting into service, if they were a Minnesota resident, the children and spouse then would be eligible for these benefits. We have a small reduction, which is probably a little bit unusual. We have a $750 educational stipend, a one-time stipend, which used to be when all federal dollars and grants were exhausted. It is now going to be exhausted federal and state grants. The last clarification becomes because it needed to be clarified that this law of 1943 applied both for peacetime and time of war. That at peacetime has been forgotten in a few cases and now will be put in bold, so that is not forgotten. Today with me is my co-author and very knowledgeable person on the veterans' bills because he has been working since elected with the MAG and also has an honorable record in service, is Representative Severson. He will introduce our testifiers. I'm a little bit jealous this morning about who he gets to introduce, but we're going to allow him to do that anyway.
Okay, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Chairman. This is one of the parts of the governor's bill that we're going to be hearing in this committee. And again, these bills are met particularly in this committee to go under scrutiny. If any of the members have questions or there's some things that need to be raised, this is a great place to do it so that we can get this bill in the fashion that it needs to get for those who are currently serving over there. Today it's my honor to be able to have testified before you, Police Officer Brian Jensen. Brian came back in 2005 from Iraq, a war-proven veteran, and he's a great example of the reason that we're pushing through this legislation, because we have members that have come back, we have members that are coming back, that are going to need a lot of the benefits that we're working on here. And so this kind of puts a face to that process, and I appreciate his willingness. Now, he's been working all night. He's taken the time to come and meet with us this morning to testify and give his views, his perspective on some of the things that we're working on. So, Brian.
Representative Hawes.
I got to sneak one more thing in about Brian. Brian is a police officer, and one of his fellow officers, Sergeant David Day, was just recently killed in combat.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Jensen, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chairman. Brian D. Jensen, and I reside in Dassel, Minnesota. If I can continue, first of all, I'd like to thank all of you for taking time and these interests with Veterans Affairs. It's certainly an honor and a privilege to meet here. I simply just wore a t-shirt today. I heard that it gets pretty heated sometimes in these committee meetings. So I apologize for the dress down mode. Just a little bit about myself. I graduated from Montevideo High School in 1985. Went to junior college in Coon Rapids for a couple of years, and then transferred to St. Cloud State, where I graduated in 1990. Took about 3 years off to save some money to put myself through the police academy. So for 3 years I worked for Norris Banks with a security loss prevention. And once I graduated from the police academy, I spent about 3 years out in South Dakota as a deputy sheriff, where I was promoted to chief deputy, and then later transferred to Dassel, Minnesota, where shortly I became police chief. In about 2004, I left there to go to St. Louis Heart, and I've been about 6 months into my probationary period. Our unit was activated, and shortly after mobilizing in Fort Dix, New Jersey, for Iraq, Operation Iraqi Freedom Number 3. I just briefly looked over the 279, and I'll be really honest with you, I thought that I was first going to talk about 272. So I will be here for that one. just to give you a little more background about myself, I know when I'm talking with people, it gives me a better understanding if I know as much as I can in a short amount of time about the person who's speaking. I also failed to mention that when I was 17, I enlisted in the National Guard. That was back in 84, and also I did do about 4 or 5 years of part-time experience with the U.S. Marshals as a transport deputy and a courtroom security guard while I was police chief of Dassel. So I have a little bit of knowledge on both federal and state law enforcement. I think that if I can give my subjective opinion about how important it is for educational benefits for widows and orphans. When the sole provider, or these days actually the mutual provider, is killed in action, not only did the battle for the spouse remaining stateside begin when the spouse left for combat, but the battle also continues after the news is delivered that they're not going to be coming home. And for those reasons, it's important to at least have a little assurance that a stipend of $750 a year for books and tuition will be provided for the spouse in this case, as well as the old wordage of the orphans as well. I think we all know the importance of having a bachelor's degree or an undergraduate degree, whether it be an associate of arts or otherwise. This day and age, you really can't go too far without having a four-year degree. And I can honestly say that because my GPA in high school, being probably a D average, and then going on to get my bachelor's degree and having a different mindset of how important it is to get homework done. It does give you a little extra foothold in your career, having that four-year degree. I don't have anything more to say about this bill. I think it speaks for itself. I'm very, I guess, for lack of a better term, conservative person. I don't like the idea of spending taxpayers' dollars without having at least a good grasp on how they feel about it, but you're the ones that have been voted in that position. And I think it would be money well spent.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Officer Jensen brings to the table just the reason why we're bringing a lot of this legislation, has articulated very well the issue that the spouses, you know, the sacrifices that the spouses make are often kind of put in the background, and some of the separation issues that they go through, as well as the family, are something that we need to kind of pick up on today. And I think that's one of the issues that this bill begins to address, and I appreciate the opportunity to bring this forward. And I wonder if we could have Commissioner Dyer come forward and then just say a few words for the bill, please.
Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Dyer.
Good morning. My name is Clark Dyer, Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. The bill that's been introduced corrects a situation that has existed since the 40s. The War Orphans Act was created at that time, but only serves the children of veterans who are deceased as a result of their service. Pardon me? Am I not?
Can't hear you very well.
Is this one better? Ah, okay. As I said earlier, this corrects a situation that has existed since the 40s. The War Orphans Act gave a stipend to the children of veterans who are deceased as a result of their service. And this would correct that situation by adding the spouses. This is a relatively small but very significant piece of legislation. Last year, only 70 people used the War Orphans Act. 70 children, in other words, 70. The impact on our department is relatively small. It's $750 per person. So the fiscal impact, we feel, could be absorbed. The money actually comes out from the State Soldiers Assistance Program, which is a much bigger program. So we feel that we as a department could absorb that. Present in the room is Steve Franz from MNSQ system. It does impact higher ed and MNSQ because it is a waiver program, a waiver of tuition also, for state institutions. And I would you like to just come forward? I think they have done a estimate of what it would cost them, because it's a two-part. We give them $750 per year by way of just a stipend, but the MNSQ system or University of Minnesota absorbs the waiver tuition. So I would like to have Mr. France say something.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Steve France. I'm with the Office of the Chancellor, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Our finance office took a look at this issue and ended a brief analysis, and of those students that currently are within our system, they take between 20 and 25 FYE. That would be a full-time equivalent for a student, not a headcount, not an individual, but a full-year equivalent. And that then is about $80,000 of foregone revenue that we absorb. We anticipate that this bill will probably add about a $40,000, about half of that, to that amount. And so we're thinking that that would have an impact of about $40,000. In early January, we received some publicity from the American Council of Education with the headline, Minnesota Leads the Charge in Serving Veterans. And we think that this is a small amount of money to add, and that our colleges and universities would probably be able to absorb that tuition quite readily. And so we don't see a problem with that. We would just hope there would be support for the board's budget when that comes through.
Mr. France?
Yes.
How about this part in the change in residency? Will that have some effect, or does that look like it would be a pretty small financial impact?
I think that will be a minor effect. I was thinking about that, Mr. Chair, and there will be some students who might otherwise come here that wouldn't, and that will be offset, and so I think that will be probably a negative sum gain.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you tell me where did you get the $750? It seems like it says here for books, supplies, and living expenses. That's kind of... where did you get that figure? Because that doesn't really seem like a whole lot of money. Because when you're talking living expenses, nowadays it's... $750 doesn't go too far.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, this is an updating of an old law, and that $750 hasn't been changed. We have some expert testimony here that they may be able to tell us if it's ever been changed since 1943.
Chair Coonan, I know it's been changed. I don't know the exact history. If there anyone here that might know, I see Jim Cleary is here from House Research. He may know.
Mr. Cleary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, Representative Dominguez. The department came forward about 4 or 5 years ago, and with the proposal that was approved by the legislature, raising that from about $150 to $750. So I imagine that $150 may date as all the way back to World War II, and the $750 is now about 5 years old.
Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, to that point, I think I'll ask Mr. Cleary to clarify on this, but I think the War Orphans Act basically says that the tuition is covered under the War Orphans Act, and the $750 is for stipend for that particular year. And I don't think the amount is as significant as the cost of the education. I think if we take a look back in history, the cost of education back in 1945 to 48 was probably very insignificant to that dollar amount. So I think that the thing that we're really focusing on here is the tuition entitlement for both the spouse and the students. So I wouldn't want us to get caught up on the $750. I think it's kind of a nice bonus. But again, if we take a look at some of the survivor benefit plans that the military has updated for our families and our spouses, I think that is significant enough that the $750 should not be used as, you know, a figure that we need to boost. Or it's kind of a figure that's almost like a monument that's been there in the past. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for either Representative Haas or Representative Severson. From what I read, the bill has removed the Minnesota residency requirement. Okay. Now, what if the spouse and child, say, are out at Fort Hood, Texas, when the death occurred, and they had residency in Fort Hood, Texas. And from what I understand is the stipend can only, in waiver of tuition, can only be used in a Minnesota university or college. Am I right?
Mr. Chair.
How would that family take advantage of this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Oz.
Representative. The law is being changed so that the residency is based on the time of the enlistment of the person going into service. It's certainly, if you're in Texas, you're not going to be able to go to school in Texas for this. You would have to go to school in Minnesota. So there is advantages and disadvantages of almost everything you read. But we would be gaining one excellent student, I'm sure of that.
All right. Further questions, members? Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps this is to counsel Mr. Cleary. You know, the title for this is War Orphans Act, and that's a federal title, which I'm sure has been in place since the early 40s. You know, I do a lot of work with adoption around here, and an orphan, I mean, if you still have one surviving parent, you're not an orphan. And, I mean, that's kind of the whole idea with this bill, is that it would also give the educational benefits to the surviving spouse. So I'm just wondering if you have anything to enlighten on that. I mean, do we need to contact Congress and tell them to update this outdated title for this legislation?
I'm here,
Mr. Cleary.
And Representative Tinglestad, actually, if you wish, you could amend this title because it's in state law. I, in drafting the bill, didn't suggest that simply because it's an easy title to communicate about among the veterans administrators. When we mention the War Orphans Act, we know exactly what we're talking about, even though technically you're correct, they're not necessarily orphans if a parent is still living.
Representative
Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, perhaps I'll talk to Representative Haas and Representative Severson as this bill moves forward, so thank you.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, like a spouse isn't an orphan. And maybe War Survivors Act, but, you know, I'm on the Early Childhood Committee, and we see a lot of instances where single parents struggle to go to school to improve themselves, to get a higher paying job, to support their families. And if you picture someone like Sergeant Jensen, who's quite young, and fortunately he did survive the war, and will again if he gets called back. But if you can imagine a mother with two or three kids, maybe she's working part-time, maybe a teller at a bank or something like that, not making a whole lot of money, graduated from high school with her husband, and shortly thereafter got married, maybe hasn't been to school except for maybe 1 or 2 years, and then stayed home to take care of the family. And all of a sudden, the trauma of losing your husband and then not being able to support yourself and go to school at the same time because there's no more a husband to help with the income and raise a family. I just think this is an excellent idea to help that spouse, could be a man, could be a woman, to better her life, improve things for her family, and move forward. So I support the bill for that respect.
Anything further from members? Okay. Closing comments, Representative Haas or Representative Severson?
Thank you very much for your listening, and thank you for the testifiers this morning. I think it also is an excellent act. I, too, stopped and hesitated on each one of the items that you did as well on the 750, and I thought, well, what really is important here is the spouse and the tuition basis. And I also stopped and took a very close look at this change for registration and when do we determine residency. But it is the survivor's father or mother that is causing that benefit, and we're judging where their residency was at the time of being eligible in a very, very hard way for this benefit for their children. I would like you to pass this bill, and we then will be moving it forward as so proclaimed at the beginning of its introduction. Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
And Mr. Chairman. Representative Hoff. Okay, we understand a residency at the time of enlistment. Okay, what if they enlisted in Texas but then moved to Minnesota and spent many years in Minnesota, joined the National Guard, was called up? What about that situation?
Well, I can tell you, I always tell people I'm not a lawyer, but I watched the O.J. Simpson trial for about 13 hours consecutive, and so that gives me a little bit of the reading of that document. And the bill says that the residency is going to be based on when the person enlists or drafts, and that's based on the Minnesota. And if it's something else, it isn't eligible. Mr. Severson.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I would concur with that. I think there are some issues in terms of eligibility that we're going to have to look at here, and I would defer to Mr. Clary for some amplifying information on this. Mr. Clary, could you address that?
Mr. Clary.
Mr. Chairman and members, Representative Detmer, you may have spotted a deficiency in this bill. I apologize for not thinking of that possibility in drafting this, or I surely would have recommended to the authors that we include a person who's serving in the Minnesota National Guard currently, irrespective of where that person may have enlisted. And there are such people, for example, who transfer here or come here after their regular military and join the Guard or Reserves. So perhaps...
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Representative Severson. Oh, excuse me. Representative...
I would like to recommend an amendment to the bill that we could say that when someone is mobilized, if they're mobilized out of Minnesota, a member of the National Guard or Army Reserve, that would also be included in this bill.
I would accept that, Mr. Chair, Representative. I would accept that as a friendly amendment. Co-author?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I also one of the things that I think we often do here as we're going through this process, and that's why I kind of opened with the remarks that, you know, we need to see if we can find holes in this thing and pass it on to the next committee. But I would ask that the committee, we can move this bill forward to the full committee if we could with that amendment and then attach the amendment before the, as we take it into the next hearing, because often we start trying to wordsmith the thing in committee and then we find some holes that we haven't really patched, or we've done something that we really didn't intend to. So I guess I would just ask that our intention would be to fix that loophole, but do it with a little bit of correct wordsmithing between now and then. So I commit to you that that will be the First Amendment that will go on this thing when we go to the next committee.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Detmer, that's agreeable. Mm-hmm. Okay, Representative Hawes and Representative Severson and Mr. Cleary, then we'll work on that. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion? Okay, Representative Hawes, would you like to renew your motion?
I would renew my motion.
Representative Hawes moves House File 279 to the Ag, Rural Economies and Veterans Affairs Committee with the recommendation to be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill passes. Okay, next bill on the agenda, House File 272, Representative Hawes and Representative Severson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm going to recommend that we pass 272 as amended, and it goes this route. Pass as amended to Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Committee with the recommendations to be re-referred to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee.
Okay. Representative Hawes, do you have an author's amendment?
Yes, and I would like you to know that Jim Clary, other than he got such expert witnesses, was on my timeout list for this. But he's, I had to say that when I had the microphone because he's very big. Thank you, James, for those. You have the amendments at your desk. Would you like me to read through them while you're also looking at them?
Yes, you want to move the amendment, and then we'll go ahead.
I would like to move the amendment, House File Number 272, as follows. You would like me to do this all the way through, please? That's what you would like. Page 2, line 14. Did you find, everybody find that copy? It's
H.O. 272A1.
It should be at your desk.
Do all members have a copy of the amendment? Okay. Explain the amendment.
Thank you very much. Page 2, line 14. After firearms, insert and use of force. Okay, so it's not only firearms, but it's firearms and use of force licensing. Page 2, line 14, delete everything after training. And this bill was meant to clarify, not to pile on to the veteran. Although some of those might be really good ideas, but they were making the bill stricter and less friendly rather than friendly. And we're trying to make Minnesota a friendly state. Page 2, delete lines 15 to 18. Page 2, line 19, delete everything before the period. 1.6, amend the title as follows. Page 1, line 2, delete firearms and employment and insert and veterans. Page 1, line 6, delete safety and usage and insert again and use of force. So there's some changes up in the title of the bill, description of the bill, and then in the back there is added to firearms and use of a force, and then there's a deletion of the requiring that it be specific training within the military.
Representative Hawes, this doesn't affect conceal and carry, these changes.
That does not.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think when the issue came forth that kind of precipitated this bill, there were some issues, particularly with law enforcement, where there were some recurrent training that was needed to ensure that the police were up to speed on current tactics with both firearms and restraint of force. That was not specifically spelled out in current law, so what we've done on this is we've basically said even in every instance where this right for the individual back and receive his employment back under the USARA law, we even recognize the fact that they may be deficient in a particular training, but we're trying to keep them on the in the employed status until that training can be achieved. So that's part of the intent of this bill. And so there have been a couple of variations of what you see here, but in fact that is what the goal of this bill is, and we are open for questions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paz.
Mr. Co-Chair, let me just give kind of, for there's a listening audience this morning too, so if we can just kind of give a clarity to what we're talking about this morning.
That would be fine. Go ahead.
When a person is in service and they have had a state license, for an array of things, but the license is given out in the state. The old law says that you're not going to be punished if this license comes outdated. You're not going to be fined, and you're not going to be penalized. And that holds for 6 months after you get out of service. Then it was upgraded for firearms and for protection and self-defense. So that is what we're talking about this morning. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a testifier here?
Excuse me. Representative Hawes.
I move the amendment as amended. I move it as amended. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hawes moves the amendment 80272A1 amendment. Members have any further questions about the amendment? Ready to vote? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is passed.
Thank you.
Representative Hawes.
Thank you. Representative Co-Chair Severson, your testifiers, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And at this point, I would ask if Officer Jensen would be willing to come down again. And
Chairman.
Okay, Officer Jensen, welcome again to the committee.
Thank you. And I believe I'll state my name for the record, Brian D. Jensen. You already had a brief history of my background, but just a refresher, I am a police officer with St. Louis Heart. And when I left, it was during a probationary period. And when I had gotten back, I still had my job, had no worries of whether I'd have my job or not. And that's because I did my homework before I put in the application. I knew that it was definitely a reputable department and an extraordinary city to work for. Unfortunately, there are others that I've heard of, no specifics, but those in smaller departments. And again, this information was passed down to me by another officer in our department that was unable to testify today. And also, I failed to mention that not only was David Day, who was killed in combat, a member of our police department, but he is also a member of my company. So he went out that day and didn't come back alive. I didn't witness the explosion, but I certainly grieved with the officers that day and waited for the convoy to come back in through the gate. The importance of knowing that one's job is not going to be negatively affected while they're away serving their country, I just can't stress enough how important that is. There's the chaos that the family goes through when they're put on alert status, and there's the goodbyes. Me personally, I kept asking myself how I was going to be able to survive without my spouse and my children, my 9-year-old son who I'm always with, and if there's a place that I'm at and he's not at, then it's probably a place that I shouldn't be at. And then there's the time away and the phone calls that are made to stateside, talking with the spouse, and problems that you try and work over through the internet and through friends. And then there's the battle of coming home, and you really don't realize it until about 2 months into the return and redeployment into the workforce. But I know one of the stresses that I was thankful that I didn't have to worry about was things that are mentioned in basically just the rewording of this bill, the clarifications. I didn't have to worry about 1 or 2 weeks off while I sought some sort of use of force training. And that was very comforting. And again, that was because of me knowingly choosing the right city to work for. So, if you have any questions, please ask. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to the authors of the bill.
Committee members, any questions for the Officer Jensen? Okay. Oh, excuse me. Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Officer Jensen, I appreciate you being here today. I have a question about the last comment that you were just mentioning you said something about 2 weeks off. Is that the length of the training for this? And normally, is that what's been happening in the past?
Well, what I did was I threw out some ballpark figures. You know, in the military, and let me just state this quick. In the military, we have what's called a risk assessment card. Before a mission, one goes over the risks that they might be facing before and during and even after the mission. And then it's grouped in columns. There might be a low frequency but high impact. And that's what I would call this the chance of an officer or a soldier rather coming back from Iraq or what have you. And having to be denied maybe a promotion because their use of force was lapsed while they're away, or maybe some other licensure or license rather. It might be low frequency and low impact, but it also might be something that happens infrequent enough, but yet with a higher impact. It might be something you know, like a week or 2 weeks or maybe even a month without a paycheck. So you know, those are just some figures I'm throwing out. I can't give you any specifics. I can't give you anything in black and white. I was basically told of the information and from a reliable source and asked to testify because they weren't able to come here today.
Further questions, members? Okay. Representative Severs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a follow-on statement. I know that it was shortly after I got into the legislature, and we had been engaged in the war on terror here for a little while, and I had received a newsletter from it was from one of our educational institutions, and in that particular newsletter, they kind of outlined how the school district could actually get out from rehiring the teacher back on after they'd come back from deployment. You know, so it kind of shocked me, and I'm kind of thinking, well, what's going on here? And I think under USERRA we have some constraints, that being a law that basically says that when the soldier comes back, he's entitled to his job. And so I think this kind of goes along the same lines, just to say this tries to identify some of those exceptions. We're not going to be able to identify every reason everyone can use for not rehiring our warriors when they come back. This is an intent to do that, but I think it sends even more of a message to say, look, when we have individuals who have sacrificed so much, we need to do all we can to make sure that when they come back, their life is normalized to the best of our ability to say, hey, we support you back home.
Representative Hodge.
Mr. Chair, our testifier, Brian Jensen, is asking to say one more thing, and I wish that you would grant that. But I also would like to point out that I have pointed out that one of his fellow officers, police officers, was killed in service, but he can also tell us that one of his fellow officers is lost in combat as well.
Officer Jensen.
Thank you, Chairman. One thing that I was going to mention that I failed to last time was that regardless of who decided to go to war or who decided to vote for it, who opposed it, regardless of all of that, to include the person who signed the contract to enlist in the military service, we all own it. Our employers own the war. It's not a situation where somebody signed up and they go and fight their war. It's our war. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Representative Oz.
Thank you very much. I renew my amendment to ask you to pass House File 272 and refer it to the Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Committee as recommended and referred to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee.
All right. Representative Hawes renews his motion to pass the bill as amended to Ag, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Committee with recommendation to be re-referred to Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee. Any further discussion? All All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, next on the agenda, House File 451, Representative Yarros.
Chairman, members of the subcommittee, thank you for this opportunity.
Representative Yarros, Representative Tingle said we'll move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my honor to move House File 451 be recommended to pass to the Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Committee with a recommendation to be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Yarros.
House File 451 says that upon the death of any person who has honorably served 6 or more years or is in active service in the Minnesota National Guard, the Adjutant General may activate members to serve as an honor guard at funerals. In Section 2, the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs shall pay within available funds and upon request by a local unit of a congressionally chartered veterans organization or its auxiliary up to $50 to the local unit for each time that the local unit provides an honor guard detail at the funeral of a deceased veteran. Mr. Chairman and the members, we got this law for our bill from Wisconsin. Our neighboring state is doing this, and I hope that Minnesota will do this because a lot of these veterans are not as young as these people, and they're on fixed income. And all they, you know, sometimes they have to go in our area to 200 funerals a year. And this small amount of money would at least pay for their gas and help them out for this, you know, honorable and great service that they do to our veterans. We have Skip. Who wants to speak? Which one? Okay, Captain Marshall, please. Identify yourself. Say your name and your.
All right, Captain Marshall. Welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, sir. My name is John Warren Marshall. I'm currently the commander of the Duluth Combined Honor Guard. And yes, I am a young member. I'm a combat wounded veteran, part of a government study, and I'm compelled to do this. I lost a driver with a baby girl 2 days later. And we have an obligation to provide military funeral services to all veterans, all eras. We sustain through honorariums. The federal government has not been able to uphold their bill. Law in 1999 that was passed that all veterans would receive military funeral honors. Two men to be provided to fold and present the flag. No rifle salute, no taps. We can't get National Guard members to represent. I have a member here, a fellow officer, who is retired military, so he is our representative. But we cannot rely on the federal government. And as a state, in my opinion, we have an obligation to take care of our veterans. Our organization started in 1967, and the men donated their time and their monies graciously and freely. It takes money to support our organization. We not only provide funeral service to families that lose veterans. That's our primary function. Always has been, always will be. We did 201 last year, 194 the year before, 176 the previous years. We also go into the communities. We teach flag etiquette, flag history, important things like that. We post colors. We provide color guards. We do basically whatever the community asks. But again, we're doing things, having dinners, spaghetti dinners or whatever, to try to raise monies to support us. And that takes away from time that we could be doing other things in the community. And I really believe that this is a bill that should be seriously considered. If you have any questions, I had a lot of other things to say, but I'm open to any questions that you folks may have. We do serve probably a capacity. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Duluth, but we also do the city of Superior. Superior has 37,000 people, and they don't have enough men for an honor guard. So we cover a vast area. We were even asked to go to Ohio, and because of the membership that we have in our guard, we were willing to do that. We'll go anywhere in the state of Minnesota to honor a veteran. And so this is a very important thing, and I'm very passionate about it. So I don't mean to interrupt. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer you.
Representative Detmer.
I think, Mr. Chair, this is not a question, but it's a statement to my own personal experiences. In Forest Lake, Minnesota, we have a very active Army or American Legion and VFW providing color guards for our events that we have in our school. And they told me time and time again that they have a shortage of men or women that would be being able to participate in these color guards. And so it's a big service to our communities.
Further questions from members? Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain Marshall, or whoever wants to answer, I get the impression from the bill, it seems that it's going to be $50 to, say, a VFW who provides an honor guard. That's just $50 to the unit, not for each person in the honor guard?
To the organization, yes, sir, that is correct. It does not go to us. It all goes into the general fund. This is to support us so that we can continue to serve the community in the capacities that we do. And it is much more than just funeral burials.
Representative Wardlow.
And Representative Jarls, the other part allows the Adjutant General to activate people from the National Guard to go serve at a funeral. So they would be activated and they'd be on active duty, so they would get paid their active duty pay, I assume. Is that? Or Captain Marshall, whoever it was.
Yes.
So I want to. Is there an additional $50 going to each member there, or that's just for the VFW or whatever?
The way it's set up, sir, is I don't think it's a question of the integrity of the honor guards, but by having a National Guard presence, which we have had a problem with.
Excuse me. Welcome to the committee and identify yourself.
Yes. My name is Robert Woods. I'm a Secretary Treasurer of the Honor Guard. I believe the intent here is, see, the original is, it even goes back to federal, is the active or reserve or guard units are the primary that should be doing the service that we're providing. The unfortunate side is because of military commitments, especially at this time where the forces just aren't available to do it. This leaves if the Adjutant General does not have troops available because they're on deployment or taking care of tragedies that are necessary, that groups like ours that are congressionally chartered can do in their absence. Because that's basically why we formed to start with. Because we've never been able to get the military. The military presently, fortunately, are doing the ones that are being killed presently in combat. But we basically take care of the individuals that have died, that basically served the country at one time in their fire, maybe retired, and we're augmenting the forces and the whatever the Adjutant General would have to pay to augment to activate his forces, I believe all you're doing there is allowing him to take out of his present budget to do what he has to do. So they would be paid their wages and what they get for their guard pay or whatever they call it. Ours would be up to a $50 stipends to help offset the cost that we incur by being basically reserve of the reserves. And one thing that Captain Marshall didn't iterate on is we get our weapons from the federal government for free, but that's where it ends. We have to maintain them. They supply the ammunition for the blanks, but we have to pay the postage to get it. We buy our own uniforms. As we all know, once you get beyond your blue jeans and your denim shirts, things get expensive. It's anywhere from $50 to $75 for a pair of pants, blouses, ties. Everything costs us a lot of money. Presently now, the organizations, your VFWs, American Legions, are taking it out of a lot of other gaming funds, which are dwindling, as you all may have heard from other testimony and other parts of your life. And so funds are being depleted from programs that are needed in the communities elsewhere so that we can bear our veterans. We're not complaining because of that. We're just hoping that this committee can forward it on with their approval so that the finances could be made so that we can help bury our fellow veterans with dignity, and that's what our job is, and we accept that job wholeheartedly.
Follow up?
Thank you. No follow up. That's what I thought. I just want to make sure I understood the bill correctly. Thank you.
Representative Hodge. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and with your testimony, you say that you travel throughout the state, anywhere that your services are needed. One concern that I would have with how this is written is, you know, $50 doesn't go too far, especially with gas prices the way they are today and if you have a long travel. And are we creating a situation in which the National Guard may enlist the services of the congressionally chartered organizations because it's going to be cheaper than having to pay at the rate in Section 192 prescribed in here? And that's just one thing that I would like to try to prevent. Should we consider including mileage expenses in this or other expenses in which we have a typical reimbursement schedule for?
Mr. Wood. I guess I could put my hand out for everything, but we're not here with greed. You know, the amount of money that has been proposed at this time is a start, and I would hopefully it would be sufficient to take care of, because on the outside we still do are going to not quit our other activities. I mean, we're still going to be having spaghetti dinners and burger nights and any way that we can get a dollar out of somebody else. And because fortunately our community, I can't speak for the state as a whole, but I would say, if you know, Minnesota Nice is Minnesota Nice, and the community to support for getting funds to bury our veterans has been good. So yes, I would like to say, you know, give me all the money you can, but no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not that kind of person. The $50 is a great amount of money, and any part of what we can get from our state to help us, we appreciate it, and we appreciate the efforts of just being here to present our case. So, no, we're not looking for any more.
I would have to agree with Mr. Woods. We'll do it regardless of whether we get a stipend or not. That's never a question. This will just help offset our costs that we do incur. And I was going to mention that today. Got a little brain black, if you will, but... yeah, we're not looking for anything more. If this was passed, we would be greatly appreciative.
Okay. Representative Detmer, to this point?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's an issue between Section 1 and Section 2. Section 1 just deals with activating members for service as honor guards, whereas Section 2, the $50 is given to the local unit. So I don't think that's an issue, Representative Haas. I don't think it's an issue.
Okay, Representative Doughty.
I was going to address that same issue also, but having the state cemetery at Ripley in my district, I can vouch that what these gentlemen are saying is very true. The same units are showing up over and over and over again, and it is a burden at times, I'm sure. Every one of them echoes the sentiments you just did, that they're happy to do that and honored to do that, and we certainly appreciate that, but sending a message like this that we support this, I think, is very important.
Representative Wolfsauger.
Well, Chair, members, I've gotten quite emotional listening. I'm actually ashamed that we haven't given you more. So I personally don't think $50 is enough.
Okay, Representative Dominguez.
First of all, I just want to say thank you for your services, and I know that my family has received services over the years that my brothers have passed on. They've been in the service, and they've used their service, and I want to say thank you. The other question I may have is that how many honor guards do you have presently?
We cannot give you an accurate number on honor guards statewide. Like I said, I was talking with Bob, and we were trying to figure out how many people we service, and we figure 150,000 or better in the local surrounding communities. So statistically, we're going to stay in the 200 funerals a year for a little while. Korea was only 5 to 8 years behind the World War II vets. We're burying a couple thousand daily nationwide, and there are only 1% of the veteran population left. So you got Vietnam and Korea. I mean, so the potential is that we're going to be quite busy for quite some time, and that's an unfortunate reality.
I don't think the issue is so much how many honor guards. I've asked that question a number of times over my career. I've been with 17 years of the honor guard. But the more question is the number of veterans that are dying. And nationwide, some of you may have seen, it's anywhere between 1,500 and 2,000 a day of our veterans are passing. Many of them, of course, are the World War II veterans. And of course, it's catching up with myself being a Vietnam veteran. I'm one of the younger ones, but yet losing quite a considerable amount of them. And like the numbers were thrown out there, we've buried on average probably 190 over the last 5 years. So if you take that statewide, which is population-wise versus the metro area that we service, we're probably doing anywhere from 4 to 5% of what's going on statewide. So that's the figure is, in all reality, is the number of, number of veterans that will be facing this. And it's by national standards, I believe the VA has said that this is going to go on until probably 2020 before the swing starts going the other way because of the life expectancy of slowly increasing. So when we're all children, somebody 80 years old was really old. Now somebody 80, pretty spry in a lot of cases. So they expect people to live to 100 years old. So, but we're looking at least another 10 years anyways where the numbers are going to be high before they go the other way. And the state of Minnesota on hold is probably going to be burying a couple thousand plus each year of
Okay. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for coming forward and testifying today. I wonder, I know that I'm part of Honor Guard for my Legion post up there, and I know we go out and do this, and it's quite an honor because you get to know some of the individuals, some of your comrades who, have served their country. So it's kind of one of those deals where I believe that, just like these gentlemen, they do it because of a sense of camaraderie and a sense of honor. And I don't know that there's any amount that could ever be reimbursed for this process, and that it's a hard issue. But I wonder if we might have Commissioner Dyrou testify to this. Could he kind of word the VA, because they're going to be integrally implemented in this process, if he would be willing to come forward.
Again, Commissioner Daggerly, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. And I would like to have our Deputy Commissioner, Mike Pugliese, come forward. He has been doing much of the work on this particular bill, so I would like to pass the microphone to him.
Welcome to the committee and identify yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Mike Pugliese, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Veterans Affairs. We all know this is an extremely heartfelt and wonderful voluntary service that they provide. And as many members here have testified to, it is something that would be nice to help them accomplish. It is very difficult with the price of gas and the wear and tear on the vehicles, getting to and from the different funerals. It's a wonderful service, and unfortunately, the government is not able to be a part of every burial for every veteran throughout the state or the nation. So what they do truly is a wonderful service, and anything we can do to help support it, as a department, we're certainly in favor of. Certainly able to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Dinglestead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pugliese, I appreciate the work you do. I'm looking at the law book here in the citation that's referenced on page 1, line 10, and it looks as though the $130 a day allowance for officers or enlisted persons, and there's some wording around that, but the way I'm reading it, it would come out of the military affairs budget, not the veterans affairs budget. Can you give me some clarification on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tingle said, that part of the bill that deals with the Guard, I believe what, and I don't want to speak for them, but I believe what would happen was they'd be able to activate some of their members to participate, and then they would get their Guard pay. So that would come out of the Guard funding.
Representative Tingle.
Thank you for that clarification, and I realize that we're not a finance division here. We're a policy division, so those things will be looked at as the bill moves on. I just really appreciate Representative Yarles for bringing this bill forward. My father was a veteran and had an honor guard, and it was probably the best part of the whole event that we had there, and I know a big piece of it is the folding of the flag, and my mom really cherishes that flag, so again, my thank you to you.
Anything further from members? Thank you. Representative Tinglestead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my motion.
Representative Tinglestead renews her motion that House File 451 pass to the Ag, Rural Economies and Veterans Affairs Committee with the recommendation to be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Any further discussion? Any follow-up?
Mr. Chairman and the members, thank you very much for a great hearing and the honor that you've given to the Honor Guard. Representative Volschlager, maybe we could work on Representative Paymar. I think he's the chairman of the committee that's going to fund this, and maybe he can increase it. That's always we can get it higher. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, all in favor of passage, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is passed. Any other business from members? Representative Tinglestead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious what you're looking at over the next several weeks as far as bills or timelines. What do you expect for our committee coming up?
Representative Tinglestead and members, the next few weeks it looks like we'll get busier and busier, and I know that not all the veterans' bills have been introduced yet, so if you know of anybody who has veterans' bills, encourage them to move them along. I'm not real sure what the committee deadlines will be yet, but I suspect that we're going to probably have to have additional meetings to get through everything, so we will be busy for the next month or month and a half. We will be taking up House File 162 next week and probably some additional bills, too, so be prepared for a fairly full meeting next week also. Representative Tinglestead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to follow up then, as far as the listing of those bills, Do you expect they'd be on the website early next week? Or typically, what's your deadline for getting the bills listed for Friday morning hearings?
Right. The bill that is listed was listed by Thursday last week, and that's our normal procedure. But because we have such we're waiting for bills to come in, that's why we have listed under bills may be added. And so we want to leave that option open. What we're trying to do is keep bills on the same subject in the same meeting. That's our attempt. So, Representative,
just to follow up, because I know that we will be getting very busy here shortly. Just to kind of keep in mind, you know, if it can be listed on the website a day or two ahead, so if members have any amendments, they have enough time to draft amendments, and especially if there's going to be a 24-hour rule within the committee. So appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we actually don't have a 24-hour rule in this committee, but for the benefit of members, as soon as we find out, we will list them on the website. And if we get so that we're down to a day or so, the bill would probably have to wait. We won't push it that hard, except that with the exception I would have to add would be if we're getting close to committee deadlines, it could be kind of a rush. But we'll work with committee members to try and give as much notification as possible. And on the other hand, too, if members do have amendments, we don't have a 24-hour rule, but we would like to know also as soon as possible. Just to get the paperwork done and get that stuff done. So, anything further? All right, meeting adjourned.